case, let's generate our motivation. And realizing that we have this precious opportunity now to meet and practice the Buddha's teachings, but that death comes suddenly and surely, and at the time of death, we have no choice but to go into the next life. There's no opportunity to rewind our life, take things back, do things differently. So we have to make sure we make wise decisions each and every moment, and use our lives so that it creates the cause for goodness in the future. Be it another good rebirth, liberation, or enlightenment. So this is our responsibility. Our teachers teach us and guide us, but they can't make us practice. We have to do that on our own. And just as we create the causes for by acting, we experience the results of our own actions. So one of the best motivations to cultivate and the best motivations to act from is the bodhicitta, the mind aspiring for full enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And even though actualizing that aim may be a long ways off, doing all of our actions with that intent, with that as something foremost in our mind, makes our life very meaningful. And so let's generate that intention now before we begin sharing the Dharma together, so that our life becomes meaningful by listening to teachings. Okay, so we've been talking about giving, and specifically giving to those beings who have not yet attained a path, which means that they have not yet entered the first of the five paths of any of the three vehicles. Okay, so they're ordinary beings. And in the text, our author had us start off by thinking of the beings in the hell realms, in the hot realm, hot hells, cold hells, neighboring hells, occasional hells, and giving to them, imagining transforming our body into whatever they need. So a cool environment for the beings in the hot hells, air con and comfort and light for the beings in the cold hells. When you think about the hell realms, you can also think of, you know, not just physical states, but mental states, you know. The mind being so cold and withdrawn that it creates that environment. The mind being so hot and out of control that it creates that physical environment. But the idea is that with an attitude of love for whatever beings are suffering in those places, then we imagine our body transforming into a wish-fulfilling body, and then multiplying and going out to all those beings in those different realms, becoming whatever it is that they need. Okay? So until now, we've gotten up to giving them all the physical things that they need to have a nice life. And then where we're starting from today is imagining giving our body so that it becomes all the conducive circumstances for them to be able to practice the Dharma. So our author says, similarly, since the principal external influence is a well-qualified and virtuous spiritual friend of the great vehicle, we should visualize our bodies as providing the basis for hearing, contemplating, and practicing the doctrine. External factors such as scriptures of sutras and tantras, and internal ones such as the seven jewels of an exalted being and three precious trainings in ethics, concentration, and wisdom. Okay? So we imagine, you know, that they're saying the principal external influence for practicing the Dharma is to have a well-qualified teacher. So we can imagine our body transforming into a teacher that gets sent out to each sentient being according to their own disposition and their need and, you know, who they would relate to. You know, people judge their teachings a lot on the packaging. You know, it's really rather stupid whether, you know, somebody's age, somebody's ethnicity, somebody's gender, you know. But sentient beings do such foolish things, so the Buddha manifests in different forms, you know, according to all of our prejudices to help us get over our prejudices. Okay? So manifesting as a Mahayana virtuous friend. So, and then we imagine our bodies as providing the basis for hearing, thinking, and meditating the doctrine. So what, you know, things do we need in order to be able to practice? We need external factors such as having the sutras and the tantras, so having the scriptures available, you know, the external factor of having a teacher. And, you know, another external factor is to have a supportive environment, to have the Sangha around us, to have Dharma friends who can aid and encourage us, to have a peaceful place that isn't war-torn, you know. So there's lots of external kind of situations that are conducive for practice. And so we imagine giving those to all the beings in the hell realms. And then we also imagine giving them the internal situations for practice, which are the seven Arya jewels. Okay? So, do you remember them?
Faith.
Giving or generosity. Ethical conduct.
Integrity.
Actually, there's another one before integrity. Listening to teachings. It's the fourth one. Then integrity. Then consideration for others. And then wisdom. Okay? So, we imagine giving them those qualities so that they have those qualities in them. Okay? And giving them the three precious trainings. So, the higher training in ethics, concentration, and wisdom. Okay? And then, essentially, these beings generate love and compassion, or these, in other words, are gifts, generate love and compassion in individuals' mind strings, acting as a wellspring for the awakening mind. So by our giving these external internal factors, then the sentient beings, all these hell beings who have now been transformed into beings who can listen to the Dharma, are able to listen, and they generate love and compassion and wisdom. And, you know, this acts as a basis for them to generate the bodhicitta. We should then imagine that through their practice of the six far-reaching practices, they reach the culmination of the two accumulations, Buddhahood, where their mind streams are endowed with the eternal delight of the perfect body of truth. So what are the two accumulations for the two collections? Merit and wisdom. Okay? So we want to accumulate. How do we accumulate merit? All the bodhisattva deeds? Which ones in particular? All of the six far-reaching attitudes? Which of the six far-reaching attitudes in particular? Huh?
The first one.
Okay.
to it.
Okay, so the first five, and then wisdom. How do we generate wisdom?
Duh.
How do we generate wisdom? Excuse me? What? Okay. So, yeah, trying to study and think about and meditate on the teachings about emptiness and selflessness. Okay. And so through this, then attaining Buddhahood, where their minds are endowed with the internal delight of the perfect body of truth. So we've talked before about merit and the accumulations or collections of merit and wisdom being principal causes for the form body of the Buddha and the truth body of the Buddha. So which is which? Yeah, so wisdom produces the truth body. And merit produces the form bodies of the Buddha. Okay, so there's a correlation there. Well, those are the primary causes. Of course, you need the other side of the other collection too. You don't just do one collection and then get one of the Buddha bodies. You have to do both collections and then you get both of them, both Buddha bodies at the same time. Okay. Then, in the same way, think as before that sentient beings, including the 36 types of hungry spirits residing throughout the 10 directions, also attain the immaculate delight of the perfect body of truth by virtue of our having given away our bodies. Okay? So, the author, Nankapel, went into depth about how to give in terms of the hell beings, about transforming our body into the physical things they need and then into the internal and external conditions for generating realizations on the path until we imagine that through our giving all these beings have attained the two Buddha bodies. Then in that one short paragraph I just read, yeah, what he's saying is do the exact same thing for all the hungry ghosts. Okay. Don't ask me what the 36 types of spirits are. I have no idea. They usually have a list of eight. I don't even know if I could list all of eight of those. But in any case, different spirits, different hungry beings who, because of their greed and their miserliness, get born in a realm where they're constantly frustrated and constantly filled with desire that can never be satisfied. Yeah, we almost meet some human beings like that sometimes too, don't we? So we imagine giving to these beings in the same way, transforming our body into the physical things they need, then transforming our body into the internal, external conditions for practicing the path, and imagining that through receiving these, they gain all the realizations and become Buddhas. Okay, so we went into depth regarding the hell beings, so now it's up to us to remember what was said and do the same for the hungry ghosts. Then, next is the animals. It says next we should repeat the meditation with respect to animals, whether they dwell in the oceans or are scattered across the land throughout the realms of the universe. Okay? So here, thinking of all different sorts of animals, some of us are animal lovers, some of us are animal haters, some of us love some animals and hate other animals, you know, again, judging them on their packaging. Yeah, we don't like when other beings judge us on our packaging, but we sure judge them on their packaging, don't they? You know, somebody in a snail body, you know, somebody in a nice kitty body, if you're not allergic to kitties, and you like them. Okay? So a tiger body, you like whenever they're in a zoo, but if you bumped into one in the street, you wouldn't like. Okay? So we have all of our prejudices about sentient beings too. But in any case, you know, to really recognize that all the animals and insects that we see are sentient beings just like us. They have a mind stream. They're under the influence of afflictions and karma. They got born in samsara due to those. they want to be happy and don't want to suffer. They have the potential to become a fully enlightened Buddha. So they're just like us. And so, you know, to tear down the wall of our discrimination and bias towards them, and, you know, imagine transforming our body into a wish-fulfilling body and giving it to all the spiders, to all the scorpions, to all the worms, to all the cockroaches, yeah, to all the ants, to all the hornets, okay, to all the porcupines, all these different beings, you know, to the moose and the deer and the raccoons and the fish and, you know, all these different beings, because they all have the potential to become fully enlightened beings. And so, because they've been kind to us in the past, because they want to be happy, then we imagine our giving our body as, and it turning into whatever it is they need, you know, temporally, as well as the conditions so they can practice the Dharma. Then it says, then we should think likewise of giving our bodies to all human beings in realms throughout the 10 directions of the universe, those beings on the 4 main and 8 subcontinents. Okay, so that's according to the old view of the universe with Mount Meru in the center and 4 continents and 8 subcontinents, but you can say living in, you know, Africa and Asia and Australia and the Americas and Europe and everywhere else in between. Okay, giving to the human beings born with freedom of movement and those without such freedom. Okay, so imagine those in free countries who can go where they want to. Giving to the people in Iran who, you know, just had their popular demonstrations repressed, giving to people in many countries where there's a military government or war or great famine where they don't have much freedom. Okay? Giving as well to those who lack the opportunity to accomplish the path to liberation in their present lifetime. Okay, so not only do we give to human beings who've met the Dharma and who are Dharma practitioners, but human beings who, for one reason or another, aren't able to, you know, practice the path, let alone accomplish it in this lifetime. So they lack all the necessary conditions, the 8 freedoms and 10 fortunes, to be able to practice the path. Yeah, so these beings might be quite famous beings, quite rich human beings in our planet, but from a Dharma viewpoint, they're quite unfortunate. So we imagine sending, transforming our body so it becomes also what they want. So you can think of different political leaders, the ones you like and the ones you don't like. Okay? People doing different occupations, the ones you approve of and the ones you don't approve of. Okay? But, you know, really thinking of all of these beings equally and giving our body, you know, completely giving our body without any attachment and transforming it into whatever forms of whatever things or people they need in order to accomplish the path and in order to be happy even in this lifetime. Okay, then in giving our bodies to those people who do not have the opportunity to achieve the path of liberation in this lifetime, we should imagine that through their fulfilling all the external and internal factors for accomplishing the path of liberation, they gain the same result as described above. Okay, so for all the beings who lack the 7 jewels of an Arya, we give those to them. For the beings who lack a teacher, we give that. For beings who lack Dharma friends, we give that. For the beings who lack scriptures, we give that. When you do this, you know, think a little bit about the situation of these different human beings that you are giving to. You know, what would it be like to live in a place and have a very sincere spiritual yearning, but there's no Dharma teachers around, no Dharma groups, no teachings? And here you have a human life, which is difficult to get. you have so many good factors, not all of them, but many of the good factors for precious human life, but no opportunity to meet the Dharma or practice it. And imagine what it would be like to be that kind of person, you know, and then you're struggling your whole life to meet a spiritual path. You can't, so all you're left with is the happiness of this life. And then you die, and what kind of rebirth do you take when you haven't been able to listen to the teachings and create positive potential by, you know, enacting them in your daily life? So you may have had a great thirst and longing, but no opportunity to really take it anywhere. And so where does that leave you at the time of death and in the next life? Okay? So to really think about the situation of all these different people, and with love and compassion, you know, give them the conditions to practice the path. Okay? Similarly, we should also give our bodies in their entirety to each sentient being abiding among the six kinds of gods of the desire realm, such as the four kings. So there's six levels of gods in the desire realm. The desire realm are beings who are overwhelmed by desire, you know, and especially sense pleasure desires. So there's all the objects of the different senses there. And so these six levels of gods have, because of their good karma in previous life, have sense pleasure deluxe this lifetime. But even though they have that, and they have great pleasure and fame and so forth, and a good situation, they don't necessarily have the opportunity to practice the Dharma. And so they don't necessarily have a good rebirth after the karma for their celestial rebirth runs out. Okay? So we want to be able to give them everything they need to be able to practice. And then to give, it says here, to the 12 kinds of gods of the form realm. I remember the form realm having 17 kinds of gods. But it's probably just different ways of classifying them. Okay, so the form realm gods, from those of the Brahma family to those of the great result, as well as the four states of the formless realm. Okay, so above, you know, in terms of concentration, those beings who have deeper samadhi than the beings in the form realm, those beings are in the formless realm. So we imagine giving to them and enabling them to attain liberation and enlightenment. Actually, although the formless realm is the highest one in samsara, you're really rather handicapped there. Oh, the ticks are still out. Okay, may you attain enlightenment. Okay, so, put them outside. So these beings of the form realms have very deep samadhis, but their minds are in such deep samadhi that they actually can't practice very well. Yeah. They just go into these deep samadhis. The first one is the samadhi of or the formless realm absorption on infinite space, then infinite consciousness, nothingness, and then the peak of samsara. So, you know, you go into these very deep, single-pointed states where, you know, your mind's just one-pointed on the object and it's very blissful, but you don't really have the opportunity to practice the Dharma and hear teachings and so on. Okay? So we've been born that way for a long time, and sometimes even confused these formless realm absorptions with the liberation, and sought them and, you know, forgot about liberation. So for the beings in those states, then we're transforming our body and giving them all of those conditions that they need to attain liberation and enlightenment. We should imagine that these gods achieve the same goal as described before. Okay, so accumulate, fulfilling the collections of merit, wisdom, and attaining the two Buddha bodies. We should also imagine giving in a like manner to beings in the intermediate state between death and rebirth. Okay, so to give to beings who are in the bardos, who have left one body and have not yet taken rebirth in another body. Okay, so that completes that section. Now, it talks about giving in particular to those who harm us. Okay, so we don't like this section. Giving to those who harm us? I'll give them. Yeah, I'll give them some insults, I'll give them a punch. You know, that's what we want to give, but that's not what it's being talked about here, okay? Having imagined creating various external necessities, such as food, clothing, and shelter from our bodies, so transforming our body into food, clothes, shelter, and medicine, we invoke all the harmful elements with the hook of the awakening mind. So we imagine, due to our bodhicitta, you know, we send the hook of compassion, we hook back all sorts of different harmful beings. So these could be human beings, they could be different spirits. Remember, Tibet is a land where, you know, kind of every rock and tree had a spirit attached to it. So they were, this was quite prominent in their mind. Then sincerely give them whatever they require. Generate a deep sense of closeness to them. Okay, so these are the people you don't like, the people that you're afraid of, that have threatened you, that give you the creeps, that have harmed you in the past, who have hurt your feelings and betrayed your trust. So all these kinds of people. Yeah. The ones that we would prefer not to see, not to be around. Yeah. So, generate a deep sense of closeness to them. Yeah. It's the opposite of what we feel, isn't it? Okay? And how do we generate that deep sense of closeness? By thinking, you have all been my own mother on countless occasions over beginningless time. Okay, so each living being, no matter what the packaging is this life, no matter what the role is they play in our life this life, they've all been our parents in previous lives. Okay, you have tried your utmost to help me in every possible way, saving me from misery and disaster. And so think of all these previous lives when we were helpless infants and all these different beings were our mothers. And they saved us from misery and disaster, you know, and protection and so on. Yesterday when I was in the dentist's office, you know, right in the middle of Hayden, you know, it's a city with big boulevards, they said that just outside the chair I was in looks out outside to a tree and a lawn, that they saw just yesterday a little fawn. Yeah, a little newborn fawn. And my first reaction was, it's in the middle of the city and there's these big boulevards and what's going to happen to this baby? So they were telling me that the fawn, you know, started to go around the side of the building to the front. And all of a sudden, mama deer appears and, you know, goes galloping after her baby. And pretty soon, Junior was back by the trees, you know. So, you know, just the kindness of the mother in protecting the child from possible danger. Yeah. So even in animals you see this, let alone what our parents have done. You know, when we've almost stuck things in electric plugs and tumbled down stairs and drunk rat poison and done all sorts of exciting things, you know. And how all these beings have been our parents and protected us and been kind to us. So even in this lifetime, if they've harmed us and maybe been cruel, it hasn't always been that way. In previous times, they've been very kind. Okay? So this kind of way of thinking is actually very important because we so easily get stuck. We form an image of somebody you know, according to maybe one incident or even a few incidents, or based on what the relationship with them happens to be this life. And then we think, this is who this person is. We make a very concrete image, you know. This is who they are. This is how I relate to them. And then, of course, we're totally miserable. Yeah, because we create these really horrible, fixed, solid, concrete images in which the other person has no ability to change. They have no ability to be kind. This is all in our mind. Of course, from their side, they have the ability to be kind, but even when they're kind, we can't see it. Even when they're generous, we think they're being stingy, you know, because of our mind has gotten so stuck in one concrete image. And we think that's the totality of somebody. So surely it isn't their totality in this life. But if we even take it beyond this life to, you know, previous lives and future lives, you know, people aren't even going to be in the same packaging, let alone the same roles. Yeah? And so if we have this big view, we see that everybody actually has been quite kind to us in the past. And so we hold our mind on that view of sentient beings instead of letting it go to this very rigid, narrow-minded, you know, horrible image that we've constructed of who somebody is in this lifetime. You know what I mean? Yeah? So this is, you know, some aspect of Dharma that is incredibly practical and that we have to really work on, because if we, you know, continue to just hold people in our minds as these concrete things, you know, we're suffering tremendously from that state of mind. Yeah? And so let's realize that people are quite complex and they've been born in many different relationships with us. They've done many kind of actions and they've also been tremendously kind in these different roles and relationships and lifetimes. Okay? So it's really important. Otherwise, our minds are just like this, you know? And then as soon as you hear somebody's name, are you aware, you know, there's some people, as soon as you hear their name, your mind goes, you know? Are there people like that? As soon, they aren't even in the room. But you just hear their name while you're walking by, and then all of a sudden your mind just goes, you know? They aren't even there, but what's happened is we've called up this very solid image we have of somebody. Yeah. Who may not even be alive and be in that kind of body right now. And who definitely isn't doing that action to us right now, because we're not in that situation anymore. Okay? So, you know, really seeing our relationships with people in multiple lifetimes, it chills things out a bit, you know, when the relationships are hot and tight, and it warms them up when things are a little bit too cold and distant, okay? So, remember that they've been kind to us, and we imagine all these beings in front of us. Okay, so you take all your enemies and the people you're afraid from, they're right in front of you, and you think, you know, you've been my mother on countless occasions from since beginning this time, and you've tried your utmost to help me in every possible way, saving me from misery and disaster. Yeah, and you think of those people, that you do this in your meditation, okay? And then you remember that in addition to this, we owe them a very immense debt, because in different lifetimes, we've had all sorts of different relationships to them. Okay? So sometimes we have eaten their flesh. I mean, even in this lifetime, most of us have eaten flesh at one point or another. So we've eaten the bodies of other living beings who have given up their bodies for our breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So we owe them a debt, don't we? You know, we don't go out on the street and say, I'm happy to give my body to anybody who wants to eat it. But we, without even asking, take other beings' bodies and eat them. So we owe them a debt. Yeah? We've eaten their flesh. We've gnawed their bones. Okay, so all the meat eaters, you know, with your lamb chops and your chicken bones and your steak bones, or, you know, maybe in previous lives even we were born as dogs and gnawed bones. Okay, so we've gnawed the bones of sentient beings. So we have a debt to pay to them, you know, because they've given us their bodies to keep us alive. We've drunk their blood and worn their skins, you know, mink coats, fur coats, leather coats. Yeah, so all these different beings who have given up their bodies, and then we've worn their skins. Even the sheep who haven't necessarily died, but, you know, they've been shorn and had, you know, I mean, they've done a lot for us, haven't they? That's how come we have wool to wear when it's really cold in the winter. Then in other lives, you know, we haven't always been born really nice people, so we have robbed them of their possessions. You know, sometimes in previous lives we may have been thieves. Even this lifetime, anybody here who hasn't stolen? Yeah. Okay, we've robbed them of their possessions, tortured them physically, and taken their lives. Yeah, so in previous lives, in this life, you know, think of sometimes of animals or insects, and maybe we tortured them, or, you know, all sorts of, as children even, you know, been inconsiderate. So we've done these kinds of horrible things to other living beings. And these all beings have all been kind to us in previous lives. So, you know, with a sense of closeness and a sense of regret for the times that we've harmed them, then we should recognize that we now have a responsibility to pay back their debt of kindness. Okay? So when we feel that very strongly, then giving our body seems quite appropriate, you know, because, you know, what's with this body, you know? It's just atoms and molecules. It's not any kind of special thing at all. We have to separate from it sometime or another. Why not give it? Since this is their right, imagine they're obtaining what they each wish in their respective forms. Food for the hungry, clothes for the needy, shelter for the homeless, friends and helpers for those who yearn for them. So again, we're giving our body and having it manifest in whatever form all these beings need. Okay, of the food, supply the three dairy products, so that's milk and butter and curd, and the three sweets, so molasses or brown sugar, white sugar, and honey. So in ancient Indian culture, these are considered very nice substances. So we transform our body and give these. And give flesh and blood for those who want them. So this could be spirits, it could be carnivores, whoever. Give liberally without restraint. So don't just give a little bit. Imagine transforming your body a little bit, but give quite generously so that beings have everything that they need. Let those who want flesh eat it. Let those who want blood drink it. Let those who want bones gnaw them. Let those who want skins wear them. So, you know, we give our body to them in precisely the same way as we have used and enjoyed their bodies in the past. Whether they want raw food immediately or cooked food eventually, let them have it. Okay, so we just give them whatever they wish. The moment we give to them, they eat, their bellies fill, and being relieved of hunger, thirst, and poverty, they gain mental satisfaction. So we give our body, and then immediately after they're, you know, taking the food, the clothes, the drinks and money or whatever we give to them, you know, the helpers, or if we want to transform into friends or whatever we want to be, immediately after we've given from them, they are free from all of their physical and mental pain, and attain satisfaction. So imagine doing this. There may be somebody who you don't like or whatever, who is suffering from loneliness, and that's why they do a lot of harmful actions. Yeah, or somebody who's suffering from low self-esteem and they do harmful actions motivated by that. Somebody who lived a horrible childhood and is afflicted by the conditioning they received in that childhood. You know, so all these different beings, imagine that we give our body in the form of whatever will satisfy them. And that by being satisfied, by receiving what they want, that their minds just become very cool and calm and happy. Yeah. So I think this is quite important, you know, for the people that we don't like, to imagine giving them things and imagining them becoming happy. Yeah. And this works as a wonderful antidote to our rigid mind that I just spoke of before, that creates a very fixed image of somebody and then can't think of any other way to relate to them outside of that fixed image that we've created. Here, we're being very creative in thinking of how to relate to them because we imagine them giving things and imagine them being transformed and becoming happy. So they become totally different people by the power of receiving our generosity. And so then, you know, this fixed, rigid image we have of them completely evaporates. Okay, are you with me? Are you seeing how this meditation could help you solve some of your psychological difficulties with people? Yeah? Are you going to do the meditation? Or are you going to sit there with your problems? Yeah? So we have to do the meditation, don't we? Okay. Their malicious thoughts and evil deeds are pacified. So, you know, we've given all these things to these people, all their harmful thoughts, all their revenge, all their motivations to hurt us, all their inconsideration, all their spaced-outedness, whatever it was, it completely is pacified. Okay. The altruistic intention of the awakening mind is born in their mind streams, so they generate bodhicitta. Yeah. And the two collections of merit and wisdom are perfected. Imagine that thereby their mind streams are imbued with the bliss of the perfect truth body. Okay? So here are these people that you had relegated to some image of them being, you know, a cross between Godzilla and the devil, you know, or, you know, whoever your thing is, yeah. You've rigified. Inventing words, people into, you know, this, you know, this is all they are, this is all the only way they act, they're horrible, they're nasty, I don't know what to do to them, I don't know any other way to relate to them, they're just like, ugh. And here, you do this meditation, and you imagine transforming your body and giving them everything, and they become peaceful, they become relaxed, their minds are happy, they're interested in the Dharma. They practice, they collect merit and wisdom, they attain the two Buddha bodies. Yeah. Okay? There is a verse which says, the result of health is happiness, and the fruit of harm is misery. See your own condition as an example, and do not inflict harm on others. Okay? So rather than harming the people that we don't like, let's be kind to them. The same practice of giving should be repeated towards all beings in every direction. Think of giving your body, just as before, to every sentient being without exception, living in the worlds in the eastern direction as numerous as the grains of sand in the Ganges River. Then give likewise to those in all the other nine directions. Okay? So you can spend a long time doing this meditation. Okay, so don't rush through it. I mean, even if you only get a little ways, if you really make it quite personal, it can be very powerful for you. Okay. So now it says offering to those who are engaged in the spiritual path. So before were those who had not attained a spiritual path. Now we're offering to beings who are, you know, in the hearer and solitary realizer path, who are stream enterers, once returners, non-returners, and arhats. And in the bodhisattva path, the bodhisattvas on any of the five paths or ten stages. So it says, make offerings to the practitioners of the fundamental vehicle by transforming your body into wish-fulfilling forms which meet their needs. So the fundamental vehicle is the vehicle where one seeks arhatship, okay, to be free from samsara oneself. So we imagine transforming our body into wish-fulfilling forms that meet the needs of any of these practitioners. So they may need conducive circumstances or teachers or scriptures or good places to practice. You also want to give them the Mahayana teachings, teach them about great love, great compassion, bodhicitta, and so on. Imagine that each one provides the practitioner with perfection of the two collections. Oh, that each one, meaning each of the wish-fulfilling forms that you send out, provides to that practitioner of the fundamental vehicle, okay, the two collections of merit and wisdom, the complete causes and conditions, inner and outer, to attain the state of Buddha. Okay? So they have all the Mahayana teachings, Mahayana scriptures, all the qualities inside and merit necessary to practice the Mahayana path. So that they become, actualize the state of Buddha, the transcendent subduer, in this very life, and that thereby they experience the bliss of the perfect body of truth in their mind streams. Okay? In the like manner, offer your body to followers of the great vehicle, from those on the paths of accumulation and preparation up to the great bodhisattvas on the 10th spiritual ground. So starting with the initial bodhisattvas, those who have generated bodhicitta but who have not yet stabilized their bodhicitta so that they can never lose it, who have not yet gained the union of calm, the calm abiding and insight on the object of emptiness, of inherent existence. So all those newborn bodhisattvas up to the bodhisattvas on the 10th ground or 10th bhumi who are just about ready to attain full enlightenment. There's just so many different levels of bodhisattvas. We imagine that again we give our body and it becomes whatever they need in order to practice. Okay. Think that they too attain the bliss of the perfect body of truth in their mind streams through the perfections of the two collections. Okay. Next, offer your body to your direct spiritual masters. Yeah. So then you make offering now to your direct spiritual masters, so those people who are your spiritual mentors in this life. Okay. You offer your body to those belonging to their lineage. Okay, so all the lineage masters of your spiritual mentors, and to the fully awakened beings residing in the infinite extensive worlds of the 10 directions, and so to all the Buddhas in all the directions. Okay, so when we offer to our spiritual masters and the lineage masters, we might imagine ourselves transforming ourselves into very good disciples and offering that to our spiritual teachers. Or we might imagine, you know, transforming ourselves into many bodies to help with our teachers' various projects and good deeds. So there's many ways of thinking of offering our body to our teachers and making it something quite personal. Imagine creating many bodies before each of them, and that these bodies have numerous arms and hands, enabling us to offer innumerable prostrations, stimulated by an understanding of the advantages to be gained thereby, due to the process of actions and results. So through having understood how cause and karma and its effects work, then we imagine, as we transform our body into wish-fulfilling bodies and multiply it and send it out in front of all these different spiritual masters, that our bodies have many arms and many legs and many mouths, so that we can do a lot of prostrations and say a lot of mantra and say the praises. Or you can do it like in the King of Prayers, where you imagine on each atom of your present body that there's, you know, again, the whole scene replicated of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and you together with all infinite sentient beings around you and all your infinite previous lives, bowing to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, making offerings to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So this is quite a beautiful visualization, you know, especially when you get into the microscopic levels and, you know, really imagining transforming things like this. Okay, so you imagine bowing to your spiritual masters and the lineage and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in this way, and as well as making offerings to them, all sorts of beautiful offerings. So all the things that we're attached to ourselves, that we usually crave for ourselves, you know, we imagine giving to our spiritual mentors. But I would suggest making them healthier than some of the things that we crave for ourselves. Okay. Furthermore, imagine immense heaps of inconceivable offerings emanated from this wish-granting body, and that thereby a great uncontaminated peace is born in their mind streams. Okay, so through the power of our offerings, may all the teachers and lineage teachers and Buddhas and Bodhisattvas experience an untainted peace. Untainted means not affected by ignorance. The guide to Bodhisattva's way of life says, may sentient beings repeatedly make offerings to all the Buddhas, and may they constantly possess the inconceivable bliss of the Buddhas. So by offering, then they receive the bliss. May Bodhisattvas fulfill the welfare of sentient beings as they wish to do, and may all living beings receive all that the Buddhas have intended for them. Similarly, may the solitary realizers and the hearers enjoy peace. This concludes the procedure for giving to the beings dwelling in the world. Okay. So, any questions? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these beings that are in the formless realms that don't have the opportunity to actually practice the Dharma because they're in such deep samadhis, you're asking, are they accumulating merit? When you take rebirth in that realm, it's due to you having attained those levels of concentration in the human realm. Okay, so your good karma from having gained those concentrations as a human being is now being used up by your being born in one of those formless realms. So you're not accumulating any new virtue. You're using up the good karma that was previously created.
Mm-hmm. So part of being born in those realms is that the bodhicitta motivation is not in the mind for those who achieve those highest states.
Okay, so part of being born in those, like the formless realms, is that they don't have bodhicitta. Yeah, because they are aspiring for those higher rebirths because they haven't thought about liberation. If you don't think about liberation for yourself, you're not going to think about liberation for others. Now, you know, Now, of course, for bodhisattvas, as bodhisattvas are practicing, they will attain those formless realm absorptions, all these different states of samadhi. But they do it for a completely different purpose. It's not so that they can be born in those realms. It's so that they can really develop very flexible minds and attain the ability to go in and out of states of concentration very quickly, because this aids them when they want to make emanations to benefit sentient beings. Okay? And so there's some of the beings in the fundamental vehicle who are also born, not in the formless realm so much, but in the form realm. But they have some realization of selflessness already. And then they use the, the meditation in the form realm to continue meditating. Yeah.
Someone online asks, what is the main purpose of learning the Buddhist wisdom? What is the main purpose of learning wisdom in Buddhism?
What is the main purpose of learning wisdom in Buddhism? It's to free our mind from ignorance, afflictions, and karma. And in that way, stop this cycle of constantly recurring problems we call cyclic existence or samsara, which means getting born again and again and again without our own control, but under the influence of ignorance, afflictions, and karma. That's why we want to generate wisdom. So wisdom doesn't mean knowledge. It doesn't mean a lot of information. And it isn't any kind of, worldly wisdom or things like that. It's a specific kind of wisdom that knows how things actually exist. Mm-hmm.
When I was asked, this is a rather complex meditation, where do I start?
Okay, so this is a complex meditation. Where do I start? Well, start with the hell realms. That's how it started in the text, with giving to the beings in the hell realms and specifically giving our body. So we haven't even gotten to giving our possessions and giving our virtue. We're giving our body and, start with the hell realms and, go through each of the realms like that. Yeah. Or if you feel it's going to be more useful to you, if you have a hard time with the different realms, then start with human beings. And imagine giving to different kinds of human beings, the ones you like, the ones you don't like, the neutral ones. Okay? So when you do this meditation, you can actually spend many meditation sessions doing the many, many parts of it. They say when you get very good at it, when you're a high-level bodhisattva, you can do the whole thing in the time it takes to inhale and exhale. We're a little bit slower. So, we can take our time with it and just start, I said you could start with the hell realms. If you don't feel comfortable with that, start with human beings. Yeah. And if it's hard to think of other human beings, you can even think of yourself in the future and imagine giving to your future self. Okay? So giving your body now to create good conditions for whoever you are in the future. Okay, so let's practice this meditation this next week. Did you do any of it last week? Yeah? It was very nice to do, so keep on with this. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine actions spread in the ten.
May the light of Losong's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiryatayani. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful tenting gas of generosity, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and non-violent actions in the ten directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West. Blue.